Headphone back in.
Okay.
Ready to rock and roll.
Welcome
to Exiled Eagles, the most ad hoc podcast out there in the world at the moment. After, just like the Palace team, after an extremely strong start, we rested on our laurels and thought that would take us through for the rest of the season, but we've decided we have to up our game. Joining me tonight is Dale Quarty, newly married. Dale Quarty, shall I say.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone.
And not so newly married, Mark Werner. How are you, Mark?
I'm good, mate. Pleasure to be here. And congratulations, Dale.
Thank you. And who's that? Is that Tony I hear?
No, it's not Tony. You have the dulcet tones of me, Rob Seltzer, this evening from the Central Coast. So this could go one of two ways. Fantastically well, and Tony's lost the job, or we'll be pining for him back like we're pining for Alan Pardew. No, that's a joke. That's a joke, everyone. Calm down, calm down. All right. So, boys, let's talk some Palace.
Do we have to?
So the last time we spoke about Palace, I think everyone was extremely excited about the season ahead. This was the one. Roy was in, full pre-season. Best squad we've had in ages. We're going to win the Champions League in a couple of years. But it's how are we feeling now, Dale?
I said in the WhatsApp group recently, this will teach me to be optimistic about Palace. It was the first season I've come in being all positive and, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And let's be honest, we are just back in the same position we have been for the last five seasons, yeah? We are an established Premier League side. We should not be in this situation. We started well. Fulham was good. Liverpool was good. You know, the win at Huddersfield was okay. There's, you know, points on the board. The draw against Newcastle was frustrating because of Mamadou. And now we see ourselves in the back end of a very horrible run with some not very winnable games ahead of us. So, you know, we're probably back in that same feeling we had last year despite the fact we have more points.
Yeah. Agreed. And Mark, I think we had a brief chat yesterday and you described it incredibly well. Please enlighten everyone on how you described our season.
Well, like Dale, I was full of beans after the Fulham game. Got the 3 points, couple of goals, clean sheet, looked the part, full of optimism, and pretty much ever since then, mate, not unlike a slow leaking balloon, making a noise not dissimilar to and the life slowly getting sucked out of it, and the optimism towards the club. Yeah, it's been I was saying to you briefly last night, it's crazy how that's been shattered so much from, you know, pre-season and then even after the opening round to now, 9 games on, and here we are, and as I said, we're looking around to see you know, making sure there's 3 teams doing worse than us, as opposed to, you know, booking a trip to Europe and these things. So, you know, 2 wins on the board, both of those teams in the relegation zone, and the third team that is in the relegation zone, we drew with at home, couldn't get a goal past them, and, yeah, Mamadou, a yard out, missed it. So, here we are. And then, of course, the easy run that we've got in front of us now in the next 4 games. So, yeah. Tough times.
I agree with everything said there. I mean, I just add to it that, the football's pretty boring as well.
Yeah.
To be honest, it's tons of passing, but just doesn't seem to be any movement. And, you know, all that early season optimism, I know it's been said on every other podcast and it's smashed all over Twitter and Facebook and every Palace thing you can see, but at the moment, there just doesn't seem anything to get fans excited about. So, it's a worry. I'd say it's worrying times. I don't think we'll go down, but it's we certainly, as Dale said, we're not where we should be.
So, I was at the Newcastle game, as you all know, and
yeah.
So, I know we'll talk about it later, but there's a lack of atmosphere at the moment with the HF. We'll cover that later. But it's one of those. circles, isn't it? What gets the fans excited? Good football. What gets the guys going on the pitch? The crowd. At the moment, neither are helping each other. The football's slow. It's, you know, I am sure that Mamadou, James Tompkins have some great pass stats because they just seem to pass amongst themselves into Luka and back again. And we appear to have no thrust going forward. And I'll be honest, it was one of the most boring games of football I've seen in a very long time.
But I could completely concur. I mean, you were there, so at least you're in the UK on holiday. I was sat here watching it on TV, and it was, trust me, it was as bad watching it on TV as I can imagine it was there. So, 100%. I mean, like this is I'm going to warn everyone now. This isn't going to be the most upbeat of podcasts. Now, it could be. It could also go on for 6.5 hours, but it won't. So we're gonna. We're going to move on. I'm going to move on probably to our main topic, I'd say, of the day. And it's our illustrious leader, Mr. Roy Hodgson. Now, he did amazingly well for us last year, and the football surprised everyone, I think, you know, the way we ended free-flowing, free-scoring and all that. But what's happened this year, and why doesn't he make any subs, Mark?
Good question, and we've been asking that amongst ourselves, all of this season. I'm not really sure. I mean, he has said in the past that he wouldn't make a sub for the sake of making a sub, and that if he didn't have as good a quality already on the pitch or better on the bench, that he wouldn't be bringing them on. And that was fair cop when you had the likes of Much and Chungy and Damo on that. On the bench, but you know, he's got guys like Meyer and Kiate, and it's like he's the only guy that doesn't see what we all see. All the pundits, guys, you know, losing their legs, and he just doesn't seem to cotton on and think that it's a good idea. Why? I mean, I don't really know. He's an older chap, Roy, and he's been around the trap, so he's forgotten more about football than I'll ever know, but. I really don't know. I mean, whether he's just, you know, I might have just got past him, the whole gig, and, I'm not 100% sure, but what he said in the past as to why he didn't doesn't stack up now.
No, agreed, 100% agreed with you there. Like last year, we had to make do. This year, we've certainly got options. Dave, I mean, what are your thoughts on it? I mean, what are your thoughts on the subs? Even, obviously, don't make a sub just for the sake of making a sub, but in the Premier League, you've got to make substitutions, whether you're chasing the game, winning a game, trying to hold out for a win or a draw.
Part of me wonders if he thinks that, you know, against Everton, it's 0-0, we've missed a penalty or whatever, but he's thinking there's a game plan, it's working, it's okay. But I just think back to the playoff final against West Ham, all those donkeys of years ago at the Millennium Stadium, and West Ham made a substitution, and I can't for the life remember who it was, but Ian Dowie immediately countered it, right? Immediately. He wasn't going to make a sub, saw who they brought on, bang, made a substitution, done. And sometimes you just need to do that to try and stay, if not level with your position, just try and get one up on them. It's no coincidence, I don't think, that our tiring legs from the players who appear to play every game, every week, every minute, were run ragged at the end of the day by the three substitutes that Everton brought on. And when you're bringing on players like Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Ademola Lookman, who have got pace to burn and skill, you're going to get hurt. And I think, I appreciate what Roy says, he's not going to bring on someone just for the sake of bringing them on. But even just to break up the play and give the guys an extra breather, he just doesn't seem to do it. And I don't know, I like Mark and like yourself, I don't understand why he doesn't. He must know, sometimes looking at some of these players, some of them are shot. He must know, looking at Luka, that he's not on the best of form, so maybe take him off with 10 minutes to go. He must look at the guys up front and say, well, we haven't got a striker up front, so maybe let's just change it and put Connor Wickham on with 10 minutes to go rather than 1 minute to go, or Andre 8, something. He's just got to do something.
Yep, I agree. I agree. And look, for what, obviously people listening to this would have probably heard, you know, Back of the Nest and Five-Year Plan, and obviously we're going to talk very similar things because there's not that much else to talk about in Palace World at the moment. But as was stated, like, for example, AWB fell into his lap because of an injury to Wardy. He wouldn't be there had Ward not got injured, and we would not see this, you know, potentially world-class right-back playing for Palace now. And so I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Sully Kaikai's ready for it and is anywhere near as good as AWB and probably will never be a Premiership player, but surely on a Saturday or Sunday or whatever it was, a 15-minute burst of Sully Kaikai, who's fresh, got a bit of skill, you know what, can shoot from 25 yards. I just don't see the logic in not putting him on, personally. But hey, we'll, that's that one. Alright, so I'll kind of move on from that then and link it with how much do you think the loss of Stephen Reid is affecting us then? Because he was obviously the younger brain, just come out of, just finished playing with, obviously Roy and Ray have been together for longer than we've been on this planet. So it was, are we seeing the effect of not having Stephen Reid that day, or do you think?
It's funny, Rob, this is actually something I hadn't even thought about, and in the past 3 or 4 days you've said it, it's come up all over Facebook and Twitter and all these different media. I don't know, I don't necessarily know what the role of some assistant managers are. It depends how close he was to the playing group, and maybe he was the one who gave Roy the nudge. On the face of it, you look at it and say, he's not there, we're suffering, therefore there must be a link. I don't know how good an assistant he is, or first team coach he is, but as I said, there's a link there, isn't there? And it's all too easy for us to draw that correlation.
True. I mean, Mark, what are your thoughts on that one?
I don't know much about Steve Reid or backroom stuff, but I don't think it's helped us, him going. And what's the word? Has he been replaced? Is there like an interim for him? Are they got discussions open to replace that?
Someone came in. Somebody moved up from within. I can't remember who it was now.
Was it Dave Kennington?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Some of that.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. You know. Our Palace knowledge on this podcast at the moment is fantastic.
But no, to answer your question, mate, it's not helping the cause. It's certainly not prodded him into, making, doing some moving and shaking regarding that. What sort of influence Steve Reid had on him when he was there, probably between him and Roy, but I'd say we're not better for him, for his departure, that's for sure.
And for my two, Penneth, I 100% agree with both of you. I'm not involved in the ins and outs of the club day to day. I don't know how good or bad or what type of job Stephen Reid was doing. But everyone's lauding it about the fact that we have a bit of continuity at the club this year. You know, Roy had a full pre-season, you know, carrying on from last year. But Stephen Reid going just kind of has put a spanner in there. That means we had to change it again. Although it wasn't right at the very top, it wasn't the manager. That coaching staff once again has changed. So the players have got another voice they've got to listen to, as opposed to, you know, the same senior coaching team that they've got year on year. So, I mean, it might be that. I mean, it might not be that. Who knows? But I just think it's never a good thing. We want that continuity. That's why, you know, we want the same team going through for the next. That's what, obviously why, you know, Sam Allardyce has Sammy Lee is number two. They always go everywhere together, Roy and Ray. There's that continuity, whereas we've lost that a bit there. So there might be a bit of that, but as you two very wise scholars said, we don't know the ins and outs and how good he was. All right, so now we're going to talk a bit about the playing group. So there's 2 points here that probably link nicely together. The first one involves Jeff Schlupp. Does he, do you think, have Roy Nudes? Either of you can answer this one first.
Out of the blocks, or I've got a theory.
So everyone knows that I'm half Ghanaian, so I'm a very staunch supporter of anyone with the black star. But I cannot for the life of me understand what Jess Schlupp is doing in the team in a central midfield or tucked in left wing position ahead of Max Meyer, ahead of Coyote, ahead of Yoel Rijderveld. I don't get it. I really don't. If Jess Schlupp plays, he plays the left back or out and out left winger. What Roy sees in him, I don't mean to speak ill of Jess Schlupp. He played 20 odd games for Leicester the year they won the Premier League. He's obviously got something about him, but he is not what we need in that position. You know, we've gone from having last year when we were playing at our best, Ruben Loftus-Cheek was playing in that position. Now, he was a player who could glide past players when he wanted to. He could come in, he could make a pass, he wouldn't lose a ball. He is the polar opposite of what we're now seeing with Jess Schlupp. And it is worrying that we believe that is the way forward.
I think so. In response to the initial question, Rob, of whether I think Schlupp has Roy nudes, I don't think he has Roy's nudes. I think he's got Roy's wife tied up in his basement and is demanding game time on a weekly basis and possibly some video footage because, yeah, I'll just reiterate what Dale said, that Fulham game, yep, banged a nice one in and I thought, oh, okay, and since then, just poo, you know? Terrible, and particularly when he's there are other guys that he'd rather see in there having a crack. Couldn't do any worse. So that's another one for that's in the grey matter of Roy that will never work out, I guess, or not nothing clear at the moment.
Exactly. Like he had a good, I'd say he had a good 60 minutes against Fulham. There was half an hour where he didn't do much. He scored the goal. But yeah, for I think Mark, you put it very eloquently and nicely there. The rest of him poo.
He's trying hard. And I don't, you know, you can't knock the guy. He's trying hard. He's playing.
I would argue that, to be honest with you, the big thing with Jess Schlupp is he's lightning quick. That's probably his number one.
He's very quick.
If you put all his attributes together, he's lightning quick. Half the time, he looks like he's going in second gear. There should be no one on that football field that can keep up with him. And people go past him and he doesn't catch him. So,
I think part of that is he doesn't know what he's doing. He's not playing in the position that he should be playing in. He looks lost. He's running around, he's getting forward, and his shooting's terrible. Players are going past him and he's like, oh, do I go? Do I stay? I think part of it is he shouldn't be playing in that position.
Oh, I don't think it's part of it. I think that's 100% of it. He's certainly not. And which brings me on nicely to like that. Why, first of all, obviously, why is he? You've mentioned the players that he shouldn't be played in front of. What the hell's Max Meyer got to do to start in this team? I mean, what's the reasons? Obviously, there was the virus on the weekend and at the start of the season, we all knew that he hadn't played for a year or so proper football. So I understand nurturing him in that way. But every cameo he's come off the bench, he's looked good, he's created, he's looked like he could be that spark that does something. Starts against Bournemouth, does pretty well, I thought. Didn't rip up trees, but I think he was decent and certainly worth a start at Wolves. Dropped to Wolves and Jess looks back in. So what can you see any reason why Max Meyer's not in this team?
Initially, I thought, oh yeah, because he'd had the long layoff, not played a lot of competitive football of late, so they're getting up to speed and so forth. And then, you know, when he had his first run, I think, he got 15 or 20 minutes and then played nearly a half. And I thought, okay, well, he'll be starting next week. And then, you know, sort of been saying that for a few weeks on the bounce. So whether there's a niggle there that's not been disclosed, I certainly don't think it's the quality, because the bits that I've seen of him, he looks great, you know. One touch, turn a guy inside out, hang on the ball, looks the part. But as for why he's not starting, don't know. I mean, so is Ayew. Why is Ayew starting so much? I wouldn't have him getting the minutes that he's getting either, but, you know, some of these...
No one else, mate.
I mean, don't know. You know, it's I'm not sure. Short of this being an injury of sorts that, you know, can be managed whilst playing, and that's why he's not just letting him off the leash. Apart from that, I don't really know. You wouldn't think it's a behavioural issue or anything like that, which he's been touted as possibly having. You know, it's too early days for him to be carrying on that sort of nonsense. So I don't know.
What about you, Sir Gorty?
I'm going to put it out there and say, aside from Wayne Hennessy and Wan-Bissaka, he's been our best player this season. As Mark said, every time he's come on, he's looked quality. Against Bournemouth, he was arguably the standout player on the pitch on a losing side until he went off. I honestly, I'm not just saying that because I'm a Palace fan. He looked brilliant. This is a guy, let's be honest, this is a man who has played Champions League football. He has played for the German national side. He's played in Confederations Cups. He's won medals at international level, albeit age group. He should be starting for Crystal Palace Football Club. If we are breaking the bank, which, let's be honest, the 85,000 a week, whatever it is a club like Crystal Palace cannot afford to have a player being paid that much sat on the bench when he is so good. What it is Roy's trying to prove, I don't know. Whether it be Wickham, Benteke, Ayew, Sorloth up front, they will benefit and look better for having him in the side. And the sooner he's in that side, the better.
Yeah.
I can't add any more to that. I completely agree. Probably last couple of bits on this kind of topic on Roy here. I think we've bashed him enough a bit. But there's probably a three-parter here. Do you think he's being outmanaged by younger coaches? So maybe has the game moved past him a little bit? You know, his standard rigid 4-4-2, only make a sub when we have to make a sub if someone's legs hanging off. Are the younger managers coming out with more, you know, innovative ideas and formations and how to change the game? If so, is he at a stage where he can still change? And if you don't think he is and you think it's... No, we'll start with that. We'll leave that for a minute. We'll come to the million-dollar question later on. So with that, is he being outmanaged? And do you think he can change that?
I don't think he's being outmanaged. And the reason I don't think he is because we have been in every game. We have certainly been in every game. We have been unfortunate in games. Let's be honest. Lucas scores a penalty against Everton. Different story, most likely. Sacco puts the header away against Newcastle. And also Luca, whoever it was, doesn't hit the post in that game. Again, different story. Suddenly we potentially have 13 points and we're not talking about Roy. I don't think he's getting out-coached for an entire game. I think there are moments in the game which are passing him by. And I believe that is where the substitutions come in or the tweaking formation or sometimes just a simple, do you know what? We're not going to play Jeschluk. We're going to take the risk and we're going to go Max Meyer. That doesn't necessarily suggest being out-coached. It just means there are moments, I think, in time which are passing him by.
Yep.
And sorry, on that, to reiterate as well, we know that he's happy to make the change. Yeah, we know it because as someone pointed out in our WhatsApp group, I think it was James, he last year Roy came in, you made an error, you're out the side. We switched between Hennessy and Spironi. We switched between... Remember that game? Was it the Brighton game when we all saw the team sheet and there's no Aaron Wan-Bissaka? Joel Ward's back in. It's like, right, he's back in. You know, he's the one who decided he's going to put Townsend and Zaha up front. So he's happy to take these risks. But for some reason, he's just lost that ability to do it at a crucial time.
I'd agree with that. Dan, I think it was mentioned on the WhatsApp chat that we had there from Jamie. I think he's been there a bit and, you know, around the training paddock and so forth. He might have worked out who his favourites are and, you know, who he gets on with, and they would seem to be favoured somewhat considering, some of the personnel he's putting out on the park week in, week out. Because like Dale said, you bugger it up and you're out, and that doesn't seem to necessarily be the case. Or certainly not as flippant this season. I'd just have to agree with Dale. Yeah, being outmanaged is probably in key moments of games, and that's just textbook Palace, isn't it? That we have been in a lot of games and getting done, you know, Everton, you know, 2 goals in 3 minutes from the, you know, the 86th and the 89th minute, and then, you know, Mamadou on the line from a yard out misses. Lots of things like that, and then, you know, we've got more points and we're not having the discussions we're having, but in true Palace style, missed all those, are where we are, and asking questions. And I guess, you know, you don't have to be far off the pace in the Premier League to just get swallowed up. You know, lots of pundits will say and have heard that it's a game of very small margins and very fine margins, and it is. Obviously, anyone on their day has, you know, a wealth of talent there, and you've got to be on it, mate. You've got to be, you know, on the razor's edge, because everyone else is. And the group or bunching up of teams, say, you know, 7 through to 17, there's just nothing in it, absolutely nothing. So you've got to be making those clever decisions with your subs and who you're getting out there on game day, and just managing all those things and the one percenters, so that, you know, those things do fall your way, and, you know, you create your own luck and that sort of thing. So those things need to start happening for us, and some would argue, well, you know, the wheel of fortune will turn and a few of those things will fall into place. But as for Roy, yes, I think you can teach an old dog new tricks, because I saw it happen on an episode of Mythbusters once, so... There's still hope for him.
for what it's worth, I completely agree. But how about let's throw this little theory out there, just for people to, because only because it hasn't been said by anyone else yet. Everyone said that we're a perfect size club for Roy to manage. You know, the Fulham, West Brom, Malmo, all, like his career. Obviously, he failed. It didn't fail, but wasn't great at Liverpool. Is our squad too? Well, our top first 11 with with the bench of Kouyaté, Maya, Riederwald, for example, three international footballers. Is our squad potentially too good for Roy? Is Roy's talent getting the best out of a Tony Pulis, for example, Sean Dyche, getting more out of his players than perhaps he should do? Now, I don't think it is personally, but I'm just throwing it out there. Okay, he did at Inter, but Inter's the only big club that have really come calling for Roy, and he did okay at. The other big club, Liverpool, they harried him out the door as soon as possible. Can you name me any players from that West Brom or Fulham team that love him, that are a Christian Benteke, a Wilfried Zaha, a Max Meyer, a Johan Kabay, an Andros Townsend, a Mamadou Sakho?
Talk about putting us on the spot. Jesus.
I know.
I want to go back to the three-parter.
But you could just say...
Yeah. Mate, I'll give you Clint Dempsey.
Clint Dempsey. But do you see my point, no?
Yeah.
I mean, for what it's worth, I think... It's just a theory.
No, I know what you're saying, Rob. 100%. I don't know.
We can call it the Seltzer Theory of Hodgson, and we'll see if that catches on.
I like it, mate. Rolls off the tongue.
All right. So we'll wrap up with one last question, and this is going to be, you know, I don't need an explanation. If you got all the pant wetters that come on Twitter, Roy's got to go. He's lost. It's done. All the people shouting from the stands, he's got to go, which is starting to get a little bit louder now, with what you see and what you're reading about. If he were to go. Which I don't think he should, by the way. I want to put that on record. I don't think he should. I think he's right. Who's out there? Who would you have? Realistically, I'm not saying, look, let's go get Zidane. Who's out there? Who would you have that can come in and do a job? Mark, you first. Because, Dale, I know you've got your ideas.
All right, well, I'll just put a red line through Zidane. Because he was going to be there For me, realistically, I like... in a realistic sense, although not that realistic, depending on how Man U go over the weekend, we might be able to get Jose. He likes the club. he gives us a clap and he's got a bit of time for us. He'd probably be happy to stay in the Premier League, but probably more realistically, yeah, Rodgers or Dyche for me. Brendan Rodgers doing great things up at Celtic, going for to give the club 10 on the bounce, I think, this season. But you guys might be able to tell me with Dyche, what's happened there? Why is that not favourable? Was there an incident or a bit of drama between some personalities with him? I don't know of that. I've just heard whispers.
I'll let Dale answer that in his rebuttal now. Okay.
Dyche, I don't think will entertain us purely after what happened when we apparently were close to offering him a contract and then we ended up taking on Frank de Boer. So I don't think he'll come back after that. And everyone, guys, know my thoughts. Brendan Rodgers wants out of Celtic, wants to come back to the Premier League. No team in the top seven will take him. The only team in that top seven sort of area who potentially would ever look at a manager like Rodgers will be Everton. He won't go there because he managed at Liverpool. If Leicester get rid of Claude Puel, then yeah, I think he will go. He's probably a good fit for them. Otherwise, someone tell me why we shouldn't be going for Brendan Rodgers. The guy's proven with Liverpool and Swansea what he can do. He had a 56-game unbeaten run or whatever it was with Celtic. You know, he's going to have some contacts. He's going to be able to bring players from Scotland. Look, I appreciate they're not all the best players up there, but there might be one or two. There might be a striker, lo and behold, we can nab. You know, is it that much of a stupid thing to think that Brendan Rodgers could come to Palace, rebuild his reputation in the Premier League and use us as a stepping stone in two or three seasons? Probably not a stupid idea. But I will caveat all this by saying, I don't want Roy to go. I want Roy to be a success this season, and I'd like him to leave on his own terms, with us having a great season, finishing top half or 11th or 12th, whatever, and Roy saying, everyone, I'm 72, I'm done. And then we'll go into the market for a manager.
Hear, hear, Dale. Hear, hear. I'll throw another name. Look, I think I like it, but I just think he'd use it as the stepping stone, so he'd be back to square one in probably 18 months if he does well. I want to throw out, I think Slavisa Jokanovic is a good manager. To be honest with you, plays good football. Like, I just think Fulham just spent far too... Look what we did when we signed 150,000 players when we first came up. They just brought too many players in, and that's probably going to be their downfall. Moving on. All right, so that's the managerial chat. I just want to touch on our star man, Mr. Wilfried Zaha. Now, it's all been said before, we rely too heavily on him. Can you see another playing style at all with the players we have now that we could win without Wilf? So he's the one that's single-handedly given us hope in games. Like, if he's not playing, everyone shits themselves that we're going to lose. But can you see any other way without Wilf at a playing style? Because, let's be honest, if we have another season like we have last season, or we don't finish anywhere near where we should do, the chances are he's going to go for big money. So, Dale, while Mark sorts out some technical issues, what do you think?
My view on the team at the moment and where we sit with Wilf is we try and put everything through him, and... at the moment, he's off his game. There's no two ways about it. He's not playing to the level we expect of him at the moment. Yeah, he won the penalty against Everton, but let's be honest, he's been a bit quiet. We don't appear to have a plan B, which is worrying. So even when he is playing, you know, my dad had always used to say, if you have a player like that and two or three players go towards him, there should be space elsewhere on the pitch. Even if there is, we seem unable to find that space. I think we have to live up to the reality that at the end of this season, he's probably going to go anyway. He's 25 years old. He's ambitious. He's done us... He came back to the club. You know, we kind of rescued him from United. and now he's been loyal to us. I think if he wants to go, he goes with everyone's blessings. I just wish that I almost want him to be injured next week and we get a result and we get a point or we win and we get this hoodoo off our back of no Wilf, no points, and then we can kick on from there.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, agreed. Mark, you there?
Mate, yeah, my camera's bit it. You guys got me on audio though?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah, cool.
We've got you on audio, but as long as we've got your voice, that's all we need.
That's what all the girls say. Mate, yeah, with Wilf, it's all the talking point across the board, you know, no Wilf, no points, that sort of thing. It's not entirely true, but yeah, obviously it's a lot more beneficial to have him on the park than not. I think, yeah, obviously ideally to back up what Dale said, we really need to get to a stage where we're not so reliant on Wilf, because I think, you know, it's great to have him and he's a very skillful player and he'd be, you know, in anyone's starting 11, but he's not going to be here forever. Chances are, end of the season, that'll be it for him. And so we have to start to learn to live and win, more importantly, get points without him. But yeah, a bit too reliant on him at the moment. So that's a worrying sign. Like Tony said at the start of the season, you know, we're only one good Wilf injury away from being right in the shit. And, you know, the way other things are going at the moment, with the viruses and this and that carry on, you know, when tech is out, you know, if that happened, then it's might should be a house of cards and it will just all topple. So we'll see.
Yeah, fair enough, guys. I want to come back to you, Dale, to start with this one as well, because you briefly you touched on it there, that he's not the Wilf that we saw against Huddersfield, which was unplayable. He's kind of dropped. Now, do you think of, and then you know, he's been the victim of a couple of absolute disgraceful challenges, namely Kapoor and Jorgensen. Do you think this rough, and obviously he came out of the referees, do you think this rough treatment is affecting him, and that's maybe one of the reasons why we're not seeing Wilf explode and do what he does?
Look, he said it. He partly said it. It makes him not want to go on a run. The cynic can turn around and say, well, it's now just an excuse. I'm not going to be the cynic. I'm going to say I think that has partly affected him. I also think, though, that teams are a bit wiser to Wilf now. So if you can cut out the passing lanes to Wilfred Zaha and stop him getting the ball, or get him in positions where he can be less effective and you get enough players around him. So if he tries to come inside, he runs into a player and he loses the ball, he just doesn't become as effective. And that's where you look and you think to yourself, well, who else have we got? And you think, well, if we had a Max Meyer playing and suddenly there's something else for people to worry about, it reopens up the space for Wilf. I also think part of this playing him through the middle has led to him not being quite as effective. As I know people say he's a centre forward, it's brilliant, it's where he wants to play. But if you look at his goals, you look at where he wins his penalties from, you look where he does the most damage, it's always coming in from the left. So I think when we put him central, we lose a little bit of what Wilf's about. So that's my view anyway.
What's your view?
Yeah, no, I thought exactly the same, actually, driving home today, that Wilf's his best flying up on the left there. Then on the weekend, we saw him come into the area, earn a penalty, which I knew Luke would miss. As soon as we got it, I thought I'd bottle this for sure. And he did. I think all the talk of Wilf and the importance that he has, and then, you know, the diving stuff, I think it doesn't leave him as free as he could be to just sort of express himself and play football. I sense that he might feel a little bit burdened by the weight of expectation from the team and the fans, because he is so good and what he can produce. So, you know, I think he's sort of getting scuppered a little bit in that department. And, yeah, I'd 100% agree with Dale, you know, get someone banging him in up front and then you know, leave him on the left to his wizardry and what he does best, and that's when we'll get the best out of him. In saying that, we also need that magical person that we can't seem to acquire at the moment to score goals.
True. And yeah, 100%, guys. I mean, the one thing that has disappointed me a little bit, especially with something like the Kapoo challenge, for example, no one did anything until Myers snapped him in two. What you want, so everyone saw, like, you, when you see the footage, Luka is staring straight at that. Now, I mean, I've played at a half-decent level of sport, and when something nasty happens that people get away with, you just can't have a word in the bloke's ear. So all you want Luka to do is go up to the Kapoo and be like, yeah, I saw that, mate, I'll break your leg next time. Just get in his ear. Just talk to him and be like, yeah, I saw that, mate. I'm going to kick the absolute shit out of you for the rest of the game. Enjoy this. I'm going down your Achilles. Because you watch him, that when Kapoo, for their first goal, when he just breaks through, no one does anything to him. And I know it's been said, everyone, no one, Luka could trip him up. And so if Luka had been in his ear saying, mate, if I'm going to be, don't go down your Achilles, I'm breaking your leg for that. When Kapoo picks up the ball and he sees Luka coming across, you know, it just puts that doubt in his mind. So just pass this ball because he's going to take me out. Because he's seen what I've done. Because Kapoo knew what he was doing. You know, Jorgensen, someone go over to Jorgensen and like, be like, sort of, mate. I'll be breaking your toes during this game. Because there's ways you can do it. Just get in their ear. Be nasty. We're just not. So that's... And, you know, defend Wilf. I mean, there's an iconic picture of... Is it Damo?
Yeah.
Holding the Reading players back. Like holding the whole of the Majeski Stadium back off Wilf. I mean, that's what you want.
And,
for someone like him. And that's what's disappointed me.
I agree with that 100%. That, and I thought, oh man, what if we still had Jedi running around? He definitely would have got up in his grill for sure. But lost a bit of that mongrel now, and you know that has spin off. So anyway,
that's it. That's it. That's what I want to see. All right. So moving on now. Let's talk the one ray of sunshine, and it's not Wayne Hennessy, the Dale's favorite player. We're going to talk about Aaron Wan-Bissaka. What a football player we have there. So, Dale, just tell me how good this kid is.
So, the kid's brilliant. The kid is... If he continues on this trajectory, he is going to be one of the finest right-backs we ever see at Palace. He has leapfrogged his way ahead of a couple of age groups and is in the England under-21 squad. You know, he has been our shining light by a mile on the pitch. I think that there are people talking about how he should be in the full England squad. No. At the moment, Kieran Trippier, Kyle Walker, Trent Alexander-Arnold are ahead of him. But that's not saying that he's not a good defender. He was very unfortunate against Liverpool with the red card. I honestly believe he's trying to pull out of the tackle and he stumbled. And he's raw. You can see it. The reason why sometimes his last-ditch tackles look so good is because he's getting himself out of position because he's still learning how to be a right-back. Let's not forget, this kid was a right midfielder up until a season and a half ago. All right? He keeps producing like this. The way he gets forward, the skill he's got from his wing days is going to worry teams no end. And defensively, he is quick and he is strong in the tackle. We have unearthed a gem. And about bloody time, too.
So, hold on. Are you telling me that he might be above Dean Austin as one of our better
right-backs? Well, it's a tough one, isn't it? Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll let that one slide for now, but we'll have words later. Mark.
He's great, isn't he?
Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah, what a gem to be unearthed at Palace and one of our own, which is something that we love. Been at the club since he was 8 or 11 or something like that. And he's just gone from strength to strength. It's probably, injury that sort of trajected him into the first team. Maybe a little bit ahead of time. And, mate, you know, they often talk about sport or things in life where, you know, you get your opportunity, you got to take it with both hands. He's done exactly that. And he's just gone from strength to strength, tailing off last season, absolute baptism of fire that he had with, you know, the first four games that he played with the opposition that he had, and mate didn't look out of place, you know, held his own, and you know, more times than not, particularly this season, been, you know, arguably our best on the park, consistently our best, and, you know, I'm glad that he's backed it up. this year, often, you know, second time round and a new pre-season and everyone's had a bit of a look at him, opens the gate to possibly go off the boil a little bit, but, you know, true champions or talented people just rise to the occasion, and he's done exactly that. You know, I can't fault him at all. And in addition to that, he's, by all accounts, just a really lovely young kid, you know, very polite in interviews. I saw him there on the Palace website. You know, he's gone down midweek, I think it was with the Palace for Life Foundation, gone down to the gym there, got the ring with a couple of kids, and, you know, trying to pass on to them, you know, the things that he's been afforded to through the club, through just dedication and hard work and, you know, not mucking about and get your head down and get into it, and it can pay dividends. And, you know, he personifies that at the moment, and we're very, very lucky to have him. And, you know, when the day comes that he goes to spread his wings, could be a good payday for us as well. So it's all very exciting.
Mark, I'll just back that up as well. Yeah. When I went to the Newcastle game, I got a picture with him. But he was actually, I intercepted him whilst he was going off to meet a fan, a young girl who was in a wheelchair. And he just had no qualms about going off to do that and being stopped. Everyone went to say hello to him because, you know, he's the bright young thing. He had no qualms about stopping and talking to everyone, saying hello, having a photo. And obviously his main focus was this young girl. And I think it's just so refreshing to see a young footballer like that just be so loved by his fan base and obviously taking it all in his stride and giving something back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't add anything else to that. I think that's perfect run out and run down. And the only thing I would add is... he's 75-1 to crack a smile to the before the end of the season.
He needs to smile. He does need to smile. It's the only thing.
Very humble. Humble young man.
So, yeah, but he is indeed. Right, the next thing I just want to kind of gloss over really quickly. I don't want to spend too much time here. One, I know we've been going for a while. And two, it's like we're not there. We could get ourselves in a lot of trouble. I just want to touch on this... the atmosphere and the HF thing. Obviously, the whole point of us is we're the Exiled Eagles. We're watching the games from a million miles away at stupid o'clock in the morning. So from my point of view, I'll hand this... Everyone can have a quick chat. As I said, I don't want to spend too much on it. Dale, you can say like how it was here and obviously at the UK. But from my point of view, they are missed. I understand all the political ramifications with the blockade. I'm not getting involved in that. But from an overseas fan... I know I'm not a true fan anymore because I don't go to Selhurst every single week, but as someone that watches the games, they are missed. And a lot of the Optus coverage who cover the football here, our whole thing has been built on the fans, and that's why we're quite liked amongst the media out here. So, yes, I know they're new. Yes, I know it's a bone of contention, but from... for people that don't know what it's like over here or probably around the world, Palace are known by that, having that vocal support. A lot of people said, "Oh, when I talk to them about supporting Palace, they say, oh my God, it's a proper football stadium. It's like football fans." And that's how it was. And you can definitely tell it's a very, very, very different footballing experience watching Palace this season. So neutrals or like fans of the opposition are definitely going to notice that. So from this person's point of view, my personal view, I'd love to see them back. But I do fully appreciate everything else that has to go in. Look, guys, have a quick say on that for a minute or two. But as I said, we don't want to start go too long. Mark, you go first, and I'll jump to Dale because you've got obviously the Aussie and the English thing, and then we'll kind of wrap it up.
Yeah, no, I think it is a prickly one, isn't it? You know, there's no silver bullet to fix the problem of relocating them. Obviously, yeah, massive dip in atmosphere at the ground, which is kind of what we're renowned for, you know, singing from the first minute to the last. Definitely noticeable absentees when they're not there doing their thing. Personally, I'd like to see them back. Obviously, I like what they do, and as does everyone. No one's got a gripe with what they do or have done. The relocation thing, which I've heard is trying to be diplomatically sorted out. And, you know, you're never going to please everyone. Like, so there's people that have been in that stand for, you know, nearly 25-odd years. And if I was there, I'd be like, well, you know, I don't know what my position would be, but I certainly wouldn't have a gripe with someone that was digging their heels in saying, well, no, I've been bringing my son here since, you know, whatever, yada, yada, yada. So everyone's going to have a story about it. That's up to, obviously, Parrish and the people involved or the head of those factions to sort it out. I think probably the only mistake they made from the get-go was the respective people involved here didn't get the answer they wanted, so they went, you know, straight on Twitter and started spruiking a bunch of stuff because they weren't getting their own way, which was not cool. And then that makes, you know, we've got some infighting going on and it looks a bit naff, you know, to other clubs to see that we have infighting going on. The last thing we need, given the other dramas we're having on the field. So I just hope that a common ground can be met and we can chuck the box on and look forward to those guys and girls in full voice doing their thing.
Yep, nice you said. Dale, as I said, let's just a quick once-over from you. Having obviously seen on the TV and being there, I mean, what's your thoughts? And then we can put this one to bed.
Atmosphere shit. We need them back. There's no denying it. They add something to the club. I have been very vocal on the WhatsApp group about how I think the club has gone about it. I don't think they've done it in the right way. Again, just my opinion. If I was being told I'm, you know, that's it, you're moving, I'll be pissed off. If I was a HF, I would be, well, we want to move because we bring so much to the club. Now, the club ultimately has to make a decision and they've made it. I just wish there was a bit more consultation as to what was going to happen. But ultimately, as a club, we know that they do bring something extra that other clubs can't bring to the table. So look, let's hopefully now it's all dealt with and we can just get back on to having a great support, get back on with having a great support and cracking on with the season.
Yep, well said, boys. And just like that, obviously, as I said, that's not that we were our own thoughts, but that's just coming at it from fans that are overseas point of view. But we understand all the political ramifications and we are not taking sides at all. I want that to be abundantly clear. We're not taking sides at all. We're just saying what we think and how we feel. All right, guys. Look, we all did predictions at the start of the season. I think we all predicted we'd win the league by a country mile, with Man City coming a distant second. After the start we've had with the runner games coming up and obviously how the season's gone, quickly, boys, what's your prediction now? Where do you think we'll finish and how do you think we'll go? Dale, you're up.
11th.
Mark him up.
13th to 17th. Somewhere in there.
13th to 17th. You've gone for a range there. Your odds are actually that's $1.08. That's paying. Dale's gone for position, so I'll give you $3.
Thank you very much.
What about you, mate? What do you reckon?
I'm gonna go 10th. Yeah. I'm gonna go 10th. I think something we'll do there.
All right, fair enough.
10th, having scored 19 goals all season. Wayne Hennessy, player of the season. There we go. Look, guys, thank you very much. I've thoroughly enjoyed hosting this one. Now I'm going to see if I can work out how to edit it. So potentially this is going to be a complete waste of time, but we'll see. So Mark, Dale, thank you very much for your expertise. Tony, you've been missed. Well, come back soon, please God. And the next pod will probably be when one of us close our eyes, puts a finger on the calendar, and that'll be the next date we record.
Thank you very much, Rob. It's been a pleasure.
Brilliant.
Cheers, Rob. Cheers, Dale.
Thanks, guys.